Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Today it's back to basics. You want a job. You know the basics of how to do it. You're sick of people telling you network, 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 polish your resume, all the rest of that crap. We're going to talk about some advanced tips for differentiating you, for levitating your application to the top of the pile. So, without further ado, and I guess I can give out the phone number now. So if you are wanting some specific help with your difficulty landing a job, I invite you to call. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, for what I call a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Okay, first tip. In the interview, people tend to, of course, everybody's nervous, but in their nervousness or whatever, or they just think that they really want to make a good impression, so they get very stuffy. They get very formal. They use language that they would never use in any other context. And the technique that I have found is most useful in helping my clients be more connecting, get better chemistry, which in the end, you know, a lot of applicants end up looking alike and it ends up being a chemistry thing. The following metaphor might work. I want you to pretend that you're having your second beer with someone. That's usually the right tone. Now, maybe if it's a bank, maybe if it's a corporate law firm, maybe that's a little too informal. But for most jobs, speaking the way you would have, not your fourth beer, not if you were, you know, miserably depressed. I want you to be like you're going out with a friend and you're having your second beer. That's the level of informality that will enable you to use language that's not going to be saying, I am a dynamic self-starter who spearheaded these initiatives and delight in exceeding customer expectations. I drove profits. I saved the company $9 zillion. All of that sounds like BS. And every employer, you know, we live in what I call flat America. Everybody's face is flat. They don't reveal squat. But inside, they're thinking, BS. Next candidate. Second beer. Use informal language. Yes, speak of your accomplishments, but in non-exaggerated terms. They all know, you know, when these canned little speeches, oh yes, we were facing a problem and there was inefficiencies in our process, and I spearheaded an initiative to look at efficiencies up and down the system, and we saved the company $84,000. They won't believe it, or they'll believe that it wasn't just you. You've got to be more human. It has been said these days that a job interview are two people lying to each other. The employer saying how great the place is and the job seeker saying all kinds of crap about how magnificent they are, right? So to abandon that mistrust and resume, look, every employer knows that, you know, I've heard that by this point that almost half of resumes contain some creative writing. Right, exaggerations of various sorts are just out and out lies, and so they don't trust the resume. So you've got this massive distrust that exists. It's like on a first date. If you're on Match.com and you photoshopped your picture, or you made it very distant so they don't see all the wrinkles all over your face and your jowly cheeks and the bags under your eyes, and then they see you and you look 20 years older than in the picture. There's going to be this distrust. So one of the key things you've got to do in a job interview is try to replace the distrust with a sense of maybe this person is different. Because quietly, each and every one of us craves integrity, whether it be in our career or our personal relationships. And if you sense that finally this person is not a BS artist, and this person is, instead of trying to convince me to snow me into hiring them, they say, you know what? I'm looking for a good fit, just as I would in a romantic partner. I wouldn't marry the first person who came along. I'm not desperate. Here are my strengths. Here are my weaknesses. Let me tell you a couple of stories. Not only use the word coupla, that's the second beer informality. Let me tell you a couple of stories about what I did and see if that's kind of a fit for what you're looking for. That is going to engender more trust and help levitate you, differentiate yourself from the mass of oh-so-primped job seekers And of course, look, skill, number one is skill. You got to have the expert, you know, either the experience or the brain power or the drive or whatever. You got to know that you got to be able to qualify for the job. But you know, that's like your basic prerequisite. That's your hunting license. That's your the hunting license for stalking your big prey. It doesn't get you to prey. So you got to have the skills. You got to have the ability. But then you have to have the ability to connect. Even if you're in some little narrow job where you're sitting in front of a computer doing spreadsheets all day, in the end, they want somebody who they can enjoy having at the break meeting. I remember a client once, really honestly, he was really a lame guy. But he ended up playing college hockey. And believe it or not, it was Cisco Systems. Cisco Systems, for whatever reason, some biggie there has a, like played soccer, that's soccer, excuse me, hockey. Yeah, hockey in college. So this guy happened to play hockey, and that's what he talked about endlessly in the interview. It makes me puke to think that this world lived, you know, exists on that kind of basis. How can a world or a country survive when there's so much of that crap that determines who gets hired? But I guess that's humankind. That's human beings. People like people who are good looking, who share their personal interests, and especially I was reading studies that say who share their politics. There is no stronger bond than somebody who shares their politics. If you are a Bernie Sanders supporter and you're getting interviewed, it would not hurt at all to talk about Bernie Sanders. That's the world we live in. So that's tip one for kind of an advanced tip in landing a job. Go beyond polishing your resume. Another one. When you're trying to network, I want to try to drive this point home with an example. I want you to imagine that you are an employer and you get an email or a phone call from somebody who says, I'm a really successful operations manager. I'm really good at what I'm doing. And yes, the company offshored all the jobs to India, but I'm really great, and I'm hoping you might want to talk with me to see if I may be able to help you. What is your real feeling? Neutral at best, or maybe doubting it or whatever. Now imagine the following. Imagine somebody else called you, ideally somebody you know, and says, you know, I know Jane Jones. Jane's is really a hell of an operations manager. She's doing a great job, but then they offshored the entire thing to India. You really should talk with her. Wouldn't you be much more likely to believe that being touted by somebody else? So, the advanced tip on networking, let others do your praising for you, because it's always tainted when you do it for yourself. Okay? Next. Now, by the way, this is... And again, this is like Sunday morning, Reverend Nemko sanctimony, and I feel guilty about doing it. But at the risk of sounding overly moralistic, do you really think it's ethical to hire a professional resume writer to write your resume? Let me explain what I mean. First of all, if you were a college admissions officer and you knew that some applicant to your college hired somebody, paid him, to write the college admissions essay, wouldn't you dismiss that application right away as a dishonest person? Well, that's what people are doing ever more. Job seekers, in their desperation to get a good job in this job market that is really not improving for good jobs. Yeah, there's a lot of crappy jobs. I'm going to go just for a side moment. I was just looking at the list of the fastest growing jobs here. Oh, where is it? Come on. Yeah. Okay. Fast growing jobs. Brick mason. Veterinary technician, that's $12 an hour. Reinforcing iron rebar worker. Physical therapy assistants who make very little money. Glaziers, window people who fix the broken windows. You know, nobody wants those jobs. Yeah, so the job market's improving. You want to clean toilets? Great, job market's available. You want to work in a restaurant? Job market's available. But you want a job that's going to, and you want a temp job that's 29 hours so the employee doesn't have to pay Obamacare? Yeah, jobs are available. You want a 3-month project job? Jobs are available. But you want a real job with 40 hours a week and benefits and everything, and it's going to be security of employment and ethical? That's not so easy to get. And so what are people doing in their desperation to try to get a good job in this non-improving economy? And I hate the media for not being honest about, they're just parroting government statistics. Oh, yes, the job boom, the unemployment rate is 5%. That so distorts the reality of the availability of decent jobs. In the real world, anybody who's been looking for a job for a long time realizes that it is really hard to get a good job. So what do? In their desperation, they hire a professional resume writer. But that is no more ethical than it really is to hire somebody to write your college application essay. And here's the punchline. Not only is it ethically wrong, by the way, I need to explain why it's so, you know, the defenders of it, and I've spoken to professional resume writers, and they hate me for saying this. They say, well, but, you know, just because somebody can't write a resume doesn't mean they're not going to be a good employee. BS. Remember that an employer uses a resume not only to see a listing of your job skills. If all they wanted was a list, they would say, list your previous jobs in the application. They don't do that. They want a resume because they use that as an indicator of how well the person writes, thinks, organizes, and plans. If somebody else is doing the writing, you get a completely distorted idea of how intelligent, how organized, how thoughtful the person is. So it's complete distortion. It's completely unethical. At least I think that. And yet the world is, you know, this is where the Reverend Nemko, you know, on Sunday, piously intoning for people to write their own resumes. Don't you understand how desperate we are to get a good job? So I have to hire a resume writer. Maybe if I were in the shoes of somebody who was choosing between eating cat food and ramen for dinner and living with seven roommates in a dicey neighborhood, maybe I too would hire a professional resume writer. But I will even say that from a pragmatic perspective, it doesn't work, and I'll tell you why. Those professional writers, they're not geniuses. They're no Einsteins. These are people who are pretty lame, and so they rely on very template sorts of approaches. They use stereotypical language that is sterile, that does feel like BS. And so they're the ones who are going to use words like, I drove profits and exceeded customer expectations and all of that. And that is not going to build chemistry. And if then you see all that fancy language, let's say you're the employer, and you see the fancy language in the resume, and then the person comes in and they're like intellectually vacant, you'll know that that is BS activity number one by the job seeker. And again, there goes the credibility, there goes the chemistry, and there goes your job. Write your own resume for both pragmatic and ethical reasons. Okay. Give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, you're going to get either tough love or kindly love, but it will be certainly honest love. The phone number here for a workover, any kind of work-related problem, whether you're a clerk or a CEO, 16 or 76, for-profit or non-profit, I can usually help. And to be honest with you, at the risk of hubris, the more difficult your problem, better I like it. It is very rare that somebody calls and say, I'm stuck. So try to get me stuck. I'll try to get you unstuck. Phone number here, work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. A couple of other just little thoughts that just passed through my head that are work-related. I was thinking now, the Obama administration has been issuing advisories to employers all over the country saying, you better be careful to not have a policy that is going to not hire ex-felons, because that has disproportionate impact on people of color, and we want to do everything we can to stop that. So I tried to put myself in the shoes of this job seeker now, this you who did not commit a felony, and you're not going to get an advantage in the job application process because you didn't commit a felony? Is this not Alice in America? When a person cannot get a preference in employment as a job seeker because he or she did not commit a felony, that an employer needs to think three times before including an item on the job application saying, did you commit a felony? There's something wrong here. If we at all care about quality of workers, let alone ability to compete with China, where I guarantee you they're going to be not as nice to ex-felons, I think we need to rethink this. And also, again, in my endless search for balance, one little word for an employer. I've had many employers as my career coaching clients. And one of the things that they have learned, and I have learned, and I've taught them lately, especially in recent years, to do, because there is so much BS in the resumes, even in the references. You know how many people use their girlfriend as a reference, their girlfriend was a boss? So when the employer calls, oh, yes, John was fabulous employee. So one of the ways that an employer can get to the truth is to probe, to deeply probe what's on the resume. So if the person said he spearheaded this initiative to save the company $9 zillion, then say, why don't you walk me through it? When did it really start? What did you do? Where was the first dilemma you faced? How did you overcome that? The more you do that, even if the person wrote is true, it reveals the depth of the person's intelligence, drive, emotional resilience, etc. So if you're an employer, even if you're just a first-line supervisor, I encourage you to probe what's on the resume. Simply walk me through it in details. Okay, I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, I can usually help. I hear on Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hi, it's you.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Long-time listener. Great show. Just a question. You mentioned the resumes and having people, write them and so forth. But my question is when I've looked for jobs, some of the questions that they have on their application, some of the questions that they ask during the interview, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years, and what sort of problems did you encounter or whatever.
Right.
But.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the jobs that I'm employing, applying for are just, they're basically service jobs. And, I don't know, sometimes I have to, come up with cheesy answers.
Okay.
Question.
No, they're not cheesy questions, and nor are they cheesy answers. So I'll give you an example. You say a service job. Are you talking about being a janitorial person, for example?
Restaurant work.
Okay, restaurant work. So let's say busboy or dishwasher or line chef chopping lettuce.
Server or a bartender, yeah.
Right, exactly. So in answer to the question, if somebody were asking me what am I planning on doing in 5 years, I wouldn't give a cheesy answer. I would give an honest answer and say, obviously, my mission in life is not to be a glass washer for the rest of my life. But I realize that at this stage in my life, I need to have a paycheck, and I'm not averse to doing low-level jobs. You'll find me quite reliable. So I'd like to start as a launch pad. Yeah, I don't mind being a dishwasher or a fill-in bartender, but I would eventually love to be the head bartender or even become a restaurant manager. That is not a BS answer. I spoke it in plain English, and that is going to be something that is a legitimate, valid thing for an employer to want to know, and that also speaks to your articulateness. Can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. Similarly, you said, what's a project you've done before? Let's say you really are really had crap jobs. Well, this is a job for a busboy. So I'm not going to tell you I cured cancer, but what I have done is I've worked at a really failing restaurant, and as a busboy, I really felt like I cleaned things up quite a bit, even in the back area, especially when I knew the health inspector was going to come. I took a little extra time on my own, and I cleaned some of the areas that I know are going to be a little dangerous. So that was a project I felt pretty good about. Can you see how that's not a BS answer, and it's relevant?
I like it. Yeah, no, that's great.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. Hi, it's you. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm wanting to ask you some, you said something complicated, so here it is. I was a student 10 years ago.
I'm hearing a lot of noise in your background. Is there any way you can reduce that noise?
Is that better?
I don't know. Keep talking.
Yeah, okay. I was at a university.
You were a student at a university? Okay.
At university 10 years ago, and I was having difficulty with cognition issues and memory recall, so I went
Why? Through... What happened? Is it drug abuse induced? It was physical illness? What was going on?
This is a long ago trauma of kidnapping when I was a child.
Okay.
So anyway, I worked through that therapy and all, but... when I found this program, a nonprofit, it helped me so much. It revolutionized my brain in ways that I was blown away.
Great.
So the problem is that this was a three-generation family operation nonprofit that is dynamic in ethics and every top drawer away. But the one problem that seems to keep showing up is their poor lack of business plan, planning, and management. And so, being one of the brainiacs that I became, I put myself at forefront, and I was the first university to be in their program, first university student to be in their program. They had previously all done all the work with younger students. So being their poster student for university level as the first one, they were pretty impressed with the outcome. So I got myself fast forward and said, I will do whatever it takes. I want to have a job with you.
Right.
And so I put myself on the front line.
That's what they do. Like, I know that, for example, Tony Robbins has all these workshops, and the people he ends up hiring are the ones who are the happiest participants. So, right, so you're the perfect person to be an ambassador for them, right?
Good. And so, anyway, the problem is that the CEO, who is 88, she died recently. Mm-hmm. And the family, lingering through her death, and, of course, the grief process. But the one thing I keep coming up against is this family entanglement, sort of a triangulation of trying to get through and trying to plan ahead. And so after the CEO's death, and this was now almost a year ago now, I put myself into international mode and went out there and did much more hardcore putting it on the map for the nonprofit. And when I returned, I was asked to consider how I might get all the work of all that I've done, not only going out in the front line, but now putting it into publication mode, getting a 10-year plan for the nonprofit, and blah, 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 at my own expense. So I'm understanding that, I mean, I'm loyal to this group, but I'm also, I don't want to sink in the quicksand here, losing scope.
Right, exactly. I was thinking two things. One is getting clarity about compensation and scope of work. You said you went international. It sounded way too big, and you're this one person, and you're right. So,
I did, and I'm going back international too because it was phenomenal. The response was incredible.
Okay, so what is within the reason? What is a high probability event of your both succeeding at it and making a difference for this organization? What should you, within the bandwidth, within the framework of how much time you have to give, what should you be for the next, let's stay focused on the next, for the next 2 months, what should you be focusing on for this organization? And should you write a simple one-page proposal so that you can be appropriately compensated for that work for the next 1 to 2 months with some very concrete deliverable, for example, a first draft 10-year plan, not even 10, nobody can plan for 10 years. A 1-year plan and a 3-year plan. Should that be what you're doing? You're saying I'm going to develop this proposal for the 1-year plan and 3-year plan for the organization, and for that I will get it to you by this date, and I want this amount of money. And internationally, this is what I want to do to focus my efforts on the most time and cost effective activity, and that is what I'm also going to do. And for that, I want X dollars. Is that what you should do?
It's really strong what you're saying, and I like it very, very much because, yes, I decided to stay for 2 months before I go international and start writing all the data that I've collected in a story form instead of this methodology that's just choking the life out of the book.
Before you go too far in it, you need to get the buy-in from who's going to be paying you. The heirs of this, of the CEO, you need to get buy-in before you put it, everybody knows storytelling works today. We live in an era that is far more sympathetic to stories than they are to hard data. So you need to write a one-page proposal that outlines what you're going to do, the general tone of it, and then see if you can get their buy-in and get paid reasonably for what you do. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? How can I help? Hello, it's you.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi there. I didn't think it would be me so soon. Hi, Marty. Thank you so much for your show. I actually am somebody who is a repeat caller.
Great.
Called a few months ago. Wasn't really able to get very far because I called like in the last couple minutes of the show.
Right.
So I'm really hoping that you'll be less stuck than I am with my career options. Just to brief you again, I have a home-based family daycare that's been very successful for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I am now approaching mid-60s and looking to do something different. And I am really stuck because I can't decide whether, well, first of all, I don't think I'm hireable at this age, or at least it would be a challenge. And
it's
I know
hard, especially because you're self-employed. You know, there's great reluctance. You know, your age, yes, we do live in an age of society, but having been self-employed, there's going to be the sense you haven't proven yourself in working for somebody else, and that maybe the reason you're self-employed is because you're terrible. Yes, it's difficult. You're right.
And even when I read job ads that are out there, which there are plenty because this is such a low-paying field that mm-hmm. people are desperate to hire,
right.
Like you were saying earlier in the show, even when I read those, I read the descriptions of what the directors of these programs would have to do, and it just makes me exhausted just to read them
okay.
for the little amount of money you're going to get for it. So
okay.
So I'm kind of thinking I'm not going to go that way.
Okay.
But I can't really, I can't really make the most basic decision, which is, do I try to find something where I can actually make enough money so I won't be homeless in 10 years because I have no, you know, being employed, I have no pensions, no, you know, barely anything saved. Or, you know, I still look for money, or do I look for something that's going to be satisfying? Because I don't see I'll ever retire for at least 15 to 20 years
well,
at this point.
Yeah, given at this point, I think, you know, given that you don't have anything and you're afraid of being homeless, I think you got to go for the money route and then on the side, do whatever you want to do as an avocation, as a hobby or whatever. But I think you got to go the money route. Does that make sense?
It does. And so are you able to do a makeover on me so I can find a new route to go? Because I can't imagine what I could do to really make some decent money.
Well, let's give it a shot. So,
okay.
And you talked, the two things I hear that are pieces already, and I want more kind of clues. One is obviously you've run a family daycare for a long time, so you know a lot about children and dealing with adults
yeah.
and parents and all the rest of it. And
oh,
also,
yeah.
and you're tired because you said when you read the job description, you said it's too much. So you're not wanting something exhausting. You want something that's going to be part-time, that's going to pay a good amount of money per hour, perhaps working with the kind of people who have children so because you understand those parents so well. Is that a fair statement?
It is.
Okay. And so I want you to picture the pool of parents. Parents are normally in their 20s, 30s, and maybe up to the mid-40s. So from the mid-20s to the mid-40s, and they're primarily women usually. They're the ones who are, you know, dropping their kids to child care. Am I being accurate so far?
Yes, pretty much. That's their ages, yeah.
Okay. So picture a room with 100 people or 100 women who are between 25 and 45 who would have put their kids into child care. If there was a goddess and the goddess was looking down upon you and saying, what is the kind of product or you could sell to them? Because the high hourly rate generally goes to people who are bringing in money. If you're bringing in serious dollars, somebody's willing to pay you. If you're a cost center, that is, you're providing a nice service like customer service or whatever, you get shit, crap money.
Exactly.
Right. So what kind of thing could you, product or service, could you sell?
I have been racking my brains with that question for 10 years, and I even thought I'd send out a survey to all of the families that come through my door, sort of a veiled survey to try to get at something that they don't have that they could use.
Well, let me get not something.
I haven't come up with anything.
Okay, well, it's something that you've got to do something they already buy and use. You're not. It's a mistake to try to be on the cutting edge because it's something new and it's very hard to sell something that's new. So let's take what they already spend money on, and we're gonna play what I call the optometry game. And I'm going to, you know, if you go to the eye doctor for contact lenses or glasses, they show you two lenses and ask you which feels better, and then after a while you can't tell.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to give you two things you could sell to that population, and you tell me which feels better. Would you rather sell insurance to them or summer camp, being a representative, selling a particular summer camp?
Summer camp.
A summer camp or, let me see, academic summer camp or, you know, were they like a computer camp, a science camp, or more a recreational camp?
Kind of 50-50 on those two.
Okay, that's fine. Would you rather represent a private high school or a private college? Would you be a recruiter for a private high school or a college?
And also 50-50 on those two. I like both of those.
You like both of those. Okay.
I like both of those. I like both of those entry age groups.
Okay.
And I will mention, by the way, just as an aside, that my daughter is, she's 24 now, and when I went through the whole college entrance and high school counseling with the people at her various schools, I thought, this is something I would wish I had a career in this instead of what I'm doing.
Great.
In other words, I identify with those people.
So what if I said I want you to become a college admissions officer at Berkeley or UCLA? They're not going to hire you because you have no experience or whatever. But these private, and I'm not saying an unethical one, a really crappy one, but a private college that, and it could be a trade college, or it could be a 4-year college or a specialty college of some sort, but a college that maybe even has great programs in early childhood, since you've got so much of that background in the child care, to take a small training program to learn how to be a good salesperson, and then go try to get a job as an admissions counselor, quote, they call them counselors, at a college, and make a real systematic effort, ideally with anybody you might know who are at college, who work in the admissions department at a college, to try to land a job being a recruiter for a college or a private high school. How does that feel to you?
But is that something that will actually pay decently? Because I know that at the lower levels, such as the at the entry level for elementary schools, and I work with those people all the time in my current job, I know that they barely make anything.
No, and it's going to vary, but especially the private. Remember, the 4-year cost of a private college is like almost $200,000 to $300,000.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So there's a
that's
ton true. Of money in that. It is a huge game, and so I think that at the college level, even at the lower levels, you're not going to be, you're talking about worrying about being homeless. You're not going to, you know, be fabulously wealthy. You're not going to live the lives of the rich and famous, but you won't be homeless. And it's going to, and it tends to be stable. And the one thing, even though the data on how much colleges are adding value is really, really pretty horrific, they ain't going out of business. Everybody's ever more desperate to get a job. And so the mindset is, if I get more education, I'm going to be more employable. And besides, education is viewed in society as the magic pill. So I am optimistic the colleges ain't going away, especially those that are career specific. You know, if there are programs that train for healthcare careers or for immigration related careers or some I don't sound like you're a technology person given what you described with your childcare.
No, very non-technology.
Right.
Yeah.
So find a specialty college that is that focuses on the things that you do know something about. And maybe also colleges for returning students. You're being in your mid-60s would make you better at recruiting returning students. Now, there's the pitch.
Recruiting, that's sales, right?
Yes,
that's...
my dear, but we're talking about making money. And as I said, to make money, you have to bring in money for the employer. You're not trying to be self-employed. And so, you know, if you're just a customer service person at a university answering questions, they'll pay you $10 an hour, or 15 if the law passes, or it is passed here in the Bay Area. But if you're trying to make money, you've got to bring in money, and that, yes, that means sales.
So how does a person who has never done sales and has never, I mean, the only marketing I've ever had to do for my business to be successful was to simply tell somebody that I'm in existence and I have more business than I can use.
Right.
It's just that kind of business. So I've never actually done sales and don't know if I have any ability at it.
Well, I think it can be. While there are born salespeople, some of the born salespeople are unethical, there are endless either articles and books and videos on the art of selling. You don't have to go for a master's in sales administration. Go on Amazon and search on the term sales training or YouTube. Do you know how many free videos there are on YouTube for how to be a good salesperson? Spend a total of 20 hours learning what you can about the art of being a good salesperson. Take some notes, take the notes, put it in a Microsoft Word file, and then practice on your family members, your friends, and see how you do, and pretend again that you are a recruiter for a college that is recruiting older students and trying to get them to come back, and that will at least give you enough that will justify your then contacting those colleges and say, I have run a child care center for 1 million years, and of course so much of what I do is selling. You don't have to say how easy it was to sell your child care, but that much of what you do, clearly you're dealing with selling to customers, continuing to get them to re-enroll, upselling them to a little more hours or whatever. Maybe you don't need to say that. But the point is you've had experience directly or indirectly in a form of education selling, and now you're merely trying to apply it to selling college admissions to adult students, given that you're in your 60s. I think that's your best shot, given this phone call, the best shot of making a non-cat food living, leveraging your skills. How's that sound?
Well, if I find that I can't even bear the thought of sales, which is always a possibility, because clearly at 62, I shied away from it. Obviously, I was in a field where I didn't ever have to do it. And the only time I had a sales job, I was only 22, and I quit it in 1 month because I couldn't handle it. So if I find that sales is just not the way to go, I'm still going to be back where I started, which was now what?
If your plan B, again, it's a the nonprofit equivalent of sales is fundraising, and being older is a huge plus.
Yeah.
Because who's got money? Kids don't have money. Old people have money. So, it's not selling this problem. Is that you don't like the idea of selling to kind of make money? There's something tawdry about it. Is what I'm getting from you. So then,
right on, Marty.
Well, you're listening to KLW. It doesn't take a genius. So fine. So if selling for your university is tawdry to you, fine. Then find your a nonprofit or whatever it is you care profoundly about. What is the if I gave you $1 million. What would you donate it to? What nonprofit cause would you donate it to?
Oh my God, I can't. I would have to think about that a little.
Oh, come on! You're working with children, so wouldn't it be children? At risk, vulnerable populations of children.
Probably, yes. I think that or animals.
Right. So why don't you make a list of all the what city do you live in?
San Francisco.
Right. There is a nonprofit for children under every rock in San Francisco.
True.
Make a list of 20 of them and make the pitch of how that you've run this business advocating for children and essentially selling your service for children. You want to work in fundraising on behalf of underprivileged, vulnerable youth. And that will enable you to live your values, and because you're bringing in money, they won't pay you the unconscionably low wages that nonprofits tend to pay because you're bringing in the money. Make sense?
And I'm assuming there's YouTubes and training videos and everything on that.
On fundraising as well.
Yeah,
videos, okay. Articles. Just Google, fundraising methodologies, fundraising techniques. That's what... And one other point. You probably have natural gift for selling you don't realize, because you said that all you have to do is say that your service is available and people sign up. If they thought you were going to be bad with their children, they would not. There's something about your personality that makes people want to buy from you. I would be the worst salesman in the world, because while I got the gift of gab, there's something about me that would make people want to disagree with me and not buy from me, where obviously you have chosen, you have succeeded at getting people to buy from you in subtle ways, not high-pressure salesmen. I'm not asking you to wear a plaid suit and pound away at them until you close them. In your understated Bay Area way, you close people. And now you can close people at the nonprofit, because especially since you have those values and you believe in children and nonprofits and vulnerability and all the rest of it and all that. I think that's probably a good, maybe a better plan A than even recruiting for university. Make sense?
That makes total sense.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Can I just mention one other thing really quick?
Sure.
What you started with about resumes, being an employer for all these years, I have never in my life seen such stressful resumes as I have this last couple of years. I don't know what's going on in the world of our young people right now, but not only is everything you said true, but I have seen resumes where people have sent me resumes which show they have no clue who they are applying to. No clue.
Yeah. Again, part of that is because employers have no loyalty to employees. So most, especially people here in the Bay Area, give the finger to employers. They hate them, and they don't want to put a lot of effort in. The resounding anger that exists toward employers in the Bay Area is enormous. And so some of why they don't is they need money. Yeah, they don't want to live with four roommates or with their parents anymore. But they hate employers. And they just want to do the least they can get away with. So they dash off a resume and they send them out to 50 at random and hope that some crap sticks.
Well, no, none of that crap sticks with me because I'm pretty old, and I lived through the times when you worked really hard on a resume. You spent a lot of time on your resume, and you worked really hard on a cover letter, and you put everything you had into it. And to be getting crap like this just absolutely floors me, especially never a cover letter, and no clue, calling me even by the wrong name and the wrong business name. I mean, this is, it's horrifying. They just go right in the can. You know, I don't even look at them.
Anyway, thanks very much for the call. Got to run.
Thank you, Marty. Bye-bye.
Yep, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm doing, this is a Back to Basics show where I'm helping people land jobs. I'm offering tips on how to land a job, taking calls. I'm going to go back to the phones in just a minute. I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, especially if you're trying to land a good job, not a crapola job, a good job in what is a deceptively improving job market. It is not improving for good jobs. It really, if you are a brilliant software engineer who's got your degree from Stanford, no problem. They're going to be fighting over you. But if you're a normal human being and you want a decent job that's 40 hours a week and with benefits and security and not doing something sleazy, the job market ain't improving. You can also find jobs cleaning toilets. They're absolutely, the market is booming for the service industry if you want to bust tables. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. That's the phone number for what I call a workover. Before I go to phones, quick tip. We are a visual species, and so if you are not too scared, creating a little, even a 10-second or a 1-minute video on of yourself, introducing yourself to a potential employer, and I wouldn't use a script because it's very, you sound sterile if you're reading a script, unless you're like a professional actor or something. So I would encourage you to just take your phone. Doesn't have to be fancy. Set your phone up on a, eye level and talk for 10 seconds to a minute. And you can do as many takes as you want, but start by saying, what you are. Like, I'm a Unix programmer, and I'm pretty good at what I do. It's my dream to work for Apple. I know how to use Ruby on Rails pretty well and Python and whatever. I'm making this up. I'm no computer programmer. And I would welcome the opportunity to talk with you about a possible job. I think you'll find me reliable. And so if you feel like talking with me, I would love to hear from you. And here's my email address or whatever. Notice I didn't use any hypey language. I didn't use hypey tone of voice. I didn't obviously use a script. I just made that up. Better that authenticity. And you can do as many takes as you want. But sometimes a brief little video that you attach to your LinkedIn profile or to letters you might send to somebody is a way of, again, building a little bit of that chemistry that is so all-important. Now all our lines are lighted up, so let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm wondering, I'm in my early 30s, and I'm struggling with finding a good job. One of the complications, I think, is that I manage an invisible disability, and in the past I've also taken jobs that were part-time or temporary or full-time temporary, and so I have a lot of scattershot jobs on my resume. Mm-hmm. And I've also moved several times, and I'm just sort of at my wit's end in terms of trying. I definitely want to go to grad school at some point. I can't afford it right now. Mm-hmm. And I am sort of in that weird position where I have a lot of professional experience, and I also have been able to find work, but it's nothing longer than a year, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Again, I would like to go to grad school. So it's sort of an in-between where certain the jobs for which I'm qualified are they're very entry-level.
I'm going to interrupt you. So clearly you need a focus, and so we're going to help you get a focus here. You said you had a disability. You kind of cut out. I didn't quite hear that. Do you have a disability, you said?
I have an invisible disability, so I manage PTSD.
Okay.
And that sort of limits, like, for example, food service work. It'd be too difficult for me to manage, just high high populations or lots of people.
Where are you most comfortable? Not most comfortable. In what kind of a work environment would the PTSD not significantly impede your work?
Well, it really depends on the work culture in the office, you know, who the people are. So it really depends on the fit. Generally, people, I've left jobs where people yell in the work environment. I have left because, you know, sometimes I was required to stay at a job, like, after midnight, which is when BART stops running, and I didn't feel safe to find a way to get back home. And I quit.
So safety is in peacefulness and safety and not feeling threatened is important. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you said you've lasted as long as a year in some of these jobs. First of all, if I funded you to go to graduate school, what do you know what graduate program you'd go into? What would you go to graduate school to do?
Well, I'm interested in public health research. So I know that there isn't a lot of funding for this kind of research, but I'm interested in longitudinal outcome studies.
Okay.
You know, like the Framingham Heart Study.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very famous. Great study. Terrific study. Okay, got it. So you said you've had experience, you've lasted as long as a year. Was there any one job or even a thread across the jobs that offers me a clue as to the kind of work that you would do well in and feel good about? And feel good in, or all those jobs a little off base.
Well, I just wanted to clarify that I haven't lasted a year in those jobs. I just haven't. I think the longest I've had a job is like 9 months. And in terms of sort of a through line, I guess, for the kinds of, I've taken jobs in medical offices, part-time, you know, reception. And then I moved on to another job that paid better, for example. I would say there's a lot of NGO experience, but there's a lot of sort of administrative work, and I really find that challenging for me, in terms of my personality, and also I need more intellectual challenge.
Right.
And
let me interrupt you. Would the ideal research project you'd be working on, would it be a longitudinal study of PTSD or something else?
I'm really interested in early childhood development. I'm interested in how stress affects gene expression.
Okay.
And I don't have a science background in my undergrad. I have a humanities degree.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is something that I would, you know, I want to help people in some way. I want to help young people.
Mm-hmm. So why would you not, for example, for me, given what you've just described, I'd want you to inveigle yourself into a university environment that did a lot of that research. So, for example, there are schools of education at Berkeley and at Stanford. Those are the research, you know, I'm not a big, anyway, let me just say that. The places that do the most research and get the most money are UCSF here in the Bay Area, UCSF, Berkeley, and Stanford. And so what I would be doing I'd be looking at the faculties of as many departments within there as possible, individual faculty members, to find somebody who is doing research that made your heart beat a little faster and you said, my God, that's exciting, and tell your story to them. I'd write them a beautiful letter or phone them. And I would explain where you are, that you are in your early 30s, you have a long-standing interest in public health research, and ideally you would love to go get a doctorate and be involved in creating some kind of, doing that kind of long-term implications of stress on, early stress on life. But you, right now you need a job, and you're looking for what I call a launch pad job. A launch pad to where you would be able to learn a lot, contribute a lot, and then be able to perhaps once being on the inside, you might be more likely to get either a tuition rebate or even a traineeship, which they give, which sometimes doctoral programs are free. But usually, unless because you have a checkered background at this point, I don't mean a bad check, it's just not focused, you need to become an insider. So if I say that your best chance of doing that is to identify 2, 3, 5 professors at Berkeley, at Stanford, and at UCSF, and write them a heartfelt letter that revealed your intelligence. Not, you know, it's always about head and heart. I don't mean to say, because chemistry is important, that, the intellectual firepower is not important. I would write an intelligent, human, thoughtful letter to make my goal a total of 15 people. And I'm betting that that is your best chance of getting a launch pad job. Does that make sense?
Yes. I mean, I that makes sense. Okay. I wrote to somebody on, there's somebody who does studies on the East Coast. They're at a university, and they, anyway, I wrote to ask if they would be a mentor, and that was in March, and I didn't hear back from
them. Yeah, no, you're not going to hear back. Nobody wants to be a mentor to a stranger like that, particularly, or very rarely, out of left field. Notice that the letter I said is that you want to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to work. You want to do. You can do X, Y, or Z, but this is your long-term goal, and you're looking for a job. And writing that letter, and I'm glad to hear you're more geographically mobile, because it may be that the professors who are most aligned with what you want to do may not be limited to those three universities I mentioned, but it could be elsewhere. So the goal is to be to identify 15 people whose research is most closely aligned with what you're interested in, and maybe when you read their bio, who you just chemically resonate with, and then write a letter individually to each explaining why you're resonating so well with them, and that your fantasy, your dream would be to work for them as a launch pad to your career. That maximizes your chances of doing what you want to do in an environment that you want to do it. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm just worried about how to support myself in the meantime. I've been on food stamps on and off for the past.
I understand. You write the letter today. You could do that in one day. Right now, if you got off the phone and you started doing the research at a bunch of universities, all the universities that have big research dollars that could afford to hire, then and you write that letter and you find one professor or two professors at each of those universities, and you write a customized paragraph about that individual and why that person and their research works well, you could do that in a day, 3 days, whatever. You know, your desperation to find work, it's your problem in part has been lack of focus. You have not had the discipline to say, I'm going to commit to doing X. My dream would be to do this PTSD research, and I'm going to laser focus in getting a launch pad job. You've taken medical receptionist jobs. You've taken whatever, but, you know, in part because of your desperation. I got that. But you haven't told me that you made any kind of a long, significant, focused effort in going after what is your priority A. And that's what I'm asking you to do. And it doesn't need to take long. And in fact, by focusing that much, you're probably going to get a job faster, because the more you read about these professors and their research, the more conversations you have with them, the more you're going to sound like you know something and therefore more likely to be hired. If you dabble around, you're going to sound like a dilettante in everything. That's my best advice. Does that make sense?
I mean, I understand that, but when somebody has been raped in the Bay Area and is dealing with the fallout from that, I think that, you know, telling somebody that they needed to have more discipline to try to manage the fallout from that is a little insensitive.
Well, I've learned over the years that legitimating, when people have had crap happen to them, they've been raped, they were in Holocaust survivor, they were Vietnam boat people, and the ones who I'm not saying it's easy, but if you expect to be employed, if you expect an employer to pay you minimum wage work, you must, at the risk of, you can call it and label me insensitive if you want it. She's hanging up. There she goes. And that will ensure her failure. That will ensure, if it's one thing I have learned from 30 years of doing this, is that the people who use their past problems, severe or not, to legitimate inaction, which you know, that's exactly what she did. She used her being raped as a child, she's in her 30 years ago, to justify her being unable to focus and write 15 letters to her dream employer. That ensures her failure, not her having been raped. Unless she has some severe mental illness that she says, I've got an invisible mental illness. But it is that victimization mentality that, at least in my experience, I've had 5,000 career and personal coaching clients. If there's one thing, lack of intelligence is also a real problem, and drug abuse and becoming inert because of, you know, they become very unmotivated. But the victimization thing is the most severe impediment to getting ahead, And what happens is they then will label somebody as insensitive or other ists or whatever, and therefore they externalize responsibility, and that dramatically increases their chance of failure. I think that call is very instructive. Dear listeners, if you have been using your past, maybe you've had a lot in therapy, people who've had a lot of therapy are the most likely, because therapy has you replay again and again what your mother did, what your father did, what the rapist did, what your husband did, what your wife did. And in the end, it renders you more impotent, less likely to move forward. My goal is to help you move forward. And I want to end the show by moving forward an unexpected call. My wife, Dr. Barbara Nemco. Welcome to the show. What's on your, what moved you to call?
Well, two things. First, I loved your idea of having somebody make a video, because not only is that something that could be very useful in getting the job, but even if you never send it to the employer, watching yourself in a video reveals so much about the way you come across that you have no way of knowing until you see yourself right there. Yeah. For example, one of your callers earlier probably said, you know, every second sentence. That's very much a turnoff to a prospective employer, especially if you're going to be dealing with the public. And you may not have any idea that you do that until you see it in the video. So that was the reason I originally called. But then listening to your last caller, we just did an event, and all school districts do it, called Every Student Succeeds, where we celebrate students who have overcome major obstacles. And we have kids who have overcome everything from autism to rape to neglect to abuse to being in 70 foster care, well, maybe 70 is an exaggeration, but being in multiple foster care situations, and they have decided how they're going to deal with this, which is not to let it take over the rest of their lives. So we just celebrated about 60 kids the other night, and I would urge the woman who called, I don't think you're being insensitive, but you're not her therapist. What you were trying to do was help her to get a job, number one focus. And sadly, that means that you have got to find a way to overcome that. If that's going to hold you back for the rest of your life, you're not going to get a good job. So that's why I called.
Okay. I appreciate it, Barb. I'll see you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Debbie Kennedy, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers. And in yet another likely vain attempt to do a Studs Terkel-like interview, I will talk with Maya B. We're going to talk about what it's really like to be a dog teeth cleaner. She does it with no anesthetic, charging $70 instead of the $1,000 that the vets charge, and very often anesthetic's not necessary. And she's a fascinating person, a little oddball, but what the heck, I think it'll be fun. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
For the archives of Dr. Marty Nemco's articles, information on his 8 books, including his new book, The Best of Marty Nemco, plus how you can consult privately with Marty, go to martynemco.com. That's Marty, MartyNemko.com. And join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemco here on 91.7 KLW San Francisco.